News Radio KONP presents the Todd Ortloff Show. Now from Port Angeles, it's Todd Ortloff.
And welcome once again to the program. We're going to spend a part of the show today talking a bit about juvenile justice, but the detention side of things just a bit. We've talked quite a bit about some programmatic things that have been happening, specifically with Clallam County's Juvenile Family Services. Today, though, we're going to talk with Chad Avery, who's the Juvenile Corrections Manager here in Clallam County. And Chad, thanks for coming out.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Let's talk first about you. You've been doing this for some time, so let's talk about how you got involved in this part of juvenile services. And kind of what keeps you doing it?
Well, what keeps me doing it is my passion to work with kids. I rolled into town in 2007, and I was fortunate enough to start with juvenile services then. So I've been there 11 years, and I started as an on-call juvenile corrections officer, worked into a full-time JCO1, and then I got promoted to a JCO2, which is pretty much a shift lead or supervisor position. And then 2 months ago, I became the corrections manager. My predecessor was Jody Jacobson, right, who is now the director.
You moved up as she moved up.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's how it works. So here I am.
Has this been something you've always wanted to do? Work in juvenile justice in that end of things? Or I always like to ask people because sometimes they start out in one way and it ends up being a different kind of career.
Not in this capacity. I've always gravitated working with youth in some fashion, and I started in radio years and years and years ago, and I had a radio show for youth. And but corrections right now, where I'm at, doing what I'm doing, it's the best job in the world for me.
Now, a lot of people will say, wow, but this is the detention side. You have the tough stuff. How do you describe that? Because some people may say that. They say, well, you're the disciplinarian arm of juvenile services.
We have the front row seat. We're right there in the trenches with them. We're the other residents because we live with them. We have 12-hour shifts back there in detention, and we're there 24/7. Right in the middle of their crisis or whatever they're going through. And we're the constant object that some of these kids have. And I can't ask for anything more. If you want to know what's going on with a kid or how our county's youth are living, come to detention because that's where it's
at. That's where you're going to see what's happening, and the actual evidence of things as well. You know, a lot of people will, and I'm sure this we can kind of cast this aside, they say, well, it's just kid jail that you're dealing with there. Well, not really. I mean, there's a bit more to it, and maybe we can kind of expand a bit on, because you're talking about juvenile services here, there's a lot more that goes into it than maybe, traditionally when somebody ends up in the adult jail, for example.
Well, it's kid jail with adult themes, because these kids are going through a lot of stuff, and it's not all tragedy and heartache, but that's there. But they are going through adult themes, and, you know, to be the authority figure that they see, that they can connect with, it's like mentorship on steroids. So you got to be on your toes for that and be ready for it. We get kids on the civil side, which is for truancy and runaway and at-risk youth, and then we get kids on the probation side where they're being supervised because they have offended and had a crime. So we run the gamut there from truancy to whatever your imagination can come up with, because you can't write this stuff in Hollywood, and it happens every day.
And tragic. I mean, I think the tragedy, as you've mentioned, it's because of some of what, probably these kids have come from. They just don't have a lot of supervision, or they have a home life or lack of home life that really is driving a lot of why they're with you, right?
And that's all it takes sometimes, because you'll meet some kids that come in, and that's the best they have it. Is the structure that we provide, the safety and security that we offer. And when we get a kid, I should say a youth, we get them in, we assess them immediately. We structure the time, not just for punitive reasons, but we structure it to how we can refer them to the services that they need, how we can best help them out, help their families out, what's their situation. So as soon as they hit our door until the time we release them, we're constantly trying to figure out how we can meet their needs.
Yeah, one of the things, too, it's the thrust of what you do. It's the ultimate rehabilitative type of services. I think jail or prison time in the adult world is, it tries to be that, but not necessarily as much as what you do in juvenile, because your end goal is to keep these youth from offending again and ending up in the adult system.
Our end goal is to keep them exactly from becoming the adult system. We have 4 years with them if they start at the, you know, at the age of 12 or at the age of 13. Then they age out. This is a small community. Now, we don't have a whole lot of time, and we don't want them to spend their childhood in and out of our jail. So, yeah, we got to do what we got to do when we have them. Capitalize on that time and not waste it.
Describe for us a bit of kind of what the biggest problems, I guess, you see. If you had to, you know, kind of quantitate or qualitate what goes on at Clallam County, what's driving most of the issues that are getting youth inside the detention center?
From my perspective, I don't know if this is scientific or anything, but my perspective, addiction is a big problem. There's a lot of addiction going on out there. There's a lot of abuse. Children are abused, and that's sad. So they come with a lot of issues on their plate. The behavior is usually a symptom of the bigger issues. So, you know, the courts get involved because a kid's behaving poorly, or they're acting out, or they're not going to school, or whatever it is. Then we get them, we start assessing them, counselors start talking to them. You start peeling the onion back, that's where the tears are.
Yeah.
You know, if people think, oh, they're going to jail, we throw the book at them. We end up writing a book about them because we find out their story, and we're able to plug them into the right services that they need.
You know, you mentioned a couple of things, and both, I think, folks who follow the issues, there's a lot of cyclicalness to that, addiction and abuse. And unfortunately, they usually go hand in hand in most cases. But would you say that there's a lot of a cycle? I mean, if you were to trace back that, you know, you've got a lot of these youth that have come from a family that had similar problems, and then, you know, generationally, maybe there's some issues here.
I'm sure that's there. I'm sure that it would be easy to point to, but I would not want to be a teenager today. Yeah, I mean, it's different. I was born in 72, so I was an 80s kid. Mm-hmm. And doing the things as an 80s kid today, you would probably get locked up. I mean, typical kid growing, coming of age stuff. It's tough out there. We didn't have the social media that they have today. We don't have all those outside influences being louder than our parents' voice or our community or church voices. And kids are going to follow the most intrusive, loud voice that's in their lives.
Yeah, and it may be, you know, I'm holding up my phone right now and it's in their pocket most of the time, right?
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And that is an interesting concept, how that has probably changed things for you in the work you do. Because I'm sure you've seen the technology and you've seen social media erupt to the level that it is now. And I think youth are a prime example of the direct effect of that.
Hey, look, if our leaders can get in trouble with social media, what can our kids get into? I mean, it's super easy. We had three networks on TV. We use rabbit ears, and our radio stations were local like this.
Yep, right.
But, I mean, these kids have the world at their fingertips, and who's guiding them through that? So,
and it's anonymous in a lot of ways, so a lot of what they're hearing, you really don't have a personal relationship, I guess, with those voices, quote-unquote, that might be directing them in one way or another.
Right, and the new phenomenon now is cyberbullying, and there's some of that going on. So kids got it tough today.
Yeah.
They have it tough today. So when you think of juvenile detention, who's going to staff it? Who's going to be there if they have to go there? And how are they going to be treated? And that's the passion that we carry.
Right. How have you had to change? I mean, in kind of how these youth show up and some of the issues they have, how as staff, how have you had to change to help address some of this?
Well, you know, because you're working with youth, you can't think of like the cop shows on TV.
Right.
And youth get a pass until they turn 18. And then once that magic number happens, all of a sudden they're adults and they have to face those consequences. So it's kind of a soft to hard discipline tactic that we take. And again, we're not designed to be punitive. We're designed to offer structure and guide them through any court process that they have. So it's not like they come back and they're just going to be miserable and thrown in a dark cell. We're going to structure their time, but that structure is for programming and for getting them services that they need. So the adaption that we have to take is we don't lead by the badge. We pretty much lead by our hearts, because it takes a special person to work detention with juveniles.
I was going to say, I think, you know, anybody that's going into, you know, criminal justice, not everybody's choosing to do that probably would fit in doing what the kind of work you do.
Right. And so that's what I want to talk about today, is that if there's anybody out there that wants to be involved with youth, wants to be a big impact in this community, we got a place for you to check out. Juvenile detention is there, and if you want, you can contact me, and I'd be more than happy to meet you and show you around.
A little bit of a misnomer, somewhat, in calling it juvenile detention. Yeah, it is what it is. You're kind of holding these kids to get them some structure and such. But sometimes I think that word detention just really has maybe a harsher ring to it in some cases than it needs to be.
It does, and I think corrections does too, because you think, you know, they're on the side of the road doing their road work or whatever. But it's a court system. Courts get involved for whatever reasons, like I said, the civil side or the offender side. And while they're going through that, we're keeping them safe and secure and providing them role model and mentorship and whatever we can do to help the process.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, in some cases, structure in the fact of having a given bedtime and rise time and some things like that, a lot of these youth have never had that, even as far as structure, correct?
And when they get it, they get a taste of it. The beauty is you see that they want it more. You'd think they would just, there'll be some rebellion at the start, but we get, unfortunately, what we call frequent flyers. They come and go, By the time they get old enough to realize, they go, this is good for me. And if they don't have that when they leave, they want it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best place for them sometimes.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. I mean, I'm same age as you. I'm an 80s kid, and you're right. We had three channels, and you know, your parents, right. I'm going to say it this way, you respected it maybe differently just simply because that was what you did. There weren't other choices, really, in those days, and the community was a lot more engaged in a different way, I guess, growing up. But that has certainly changed now. And even if I'm off my schedule a bit, you just kind of feel lost, you know, when it comes down to even, you know, coming to work, for example.
And not only that, we see youth that come in that this is a place where they're accepted, they're acknowledged, they're recognized, and it's not, you know, the tension, all the negative is going to be pointed out. No, we're able to point out what's good about them, and you can just see a night and day change.
Right. A lot of people will see a kid doing something and they say, well, you got to punish that kid. That's kind of part of it. But as you just alluded to, there's a lot of carrot and a little bit of stick,
right.
I guess might be a good way to put it. How do you help define that? Because punishment is part of what needs to probably happen. But how do you go about being effective in that? Because just locking up a kid, I don't think I've ever heard of a case where that's really worked.
No, and it's got to be fair. So we call them consequences. We don't punish. But there's consequences. That's just part of being human. My decisions will have consequences, good or bad. Mm-hmm. So if their behavior deserves a consequence, it's got to match what their behavior is doing. It can't be out of the ordinary or cruel and unusual. And when they see that modeled and they know that they were given plenty of moments to get out of it and that you've been fair and consistent and upfront and honest with them, that's when the respect is. It's a relationship. You're building rapport, you're building a relationship, and you're growing and fostering this sense of reverence for that structure. And then they start adapting it on their own, and it's empowering to them.
I'm going to take a break, and I want to come back, and we'll talk about kind of typically how a case gets worked through detention and into those other services, too, that probably the most important part is that it's a way to get help for some of these kids who have addiction problems or some other things as well. And we'll touch back again a little bit about what it takes to be a juvenile corrections officer as we talk with the recently appointed juvenile corrections manager, although he's been at the facility for many years. That's Chad Avery here in Clallam County, and we'll chat a bit more with him about juvenile justice on the detention center side of things right after this.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio 1450 KONP.
The holiday countdown sale is underway at Coastal. Find the perfect gift for everyone on your list.
Coastal Farm and Ranch. Just what your holidays need.
All Ariat men's and ladies tops are 20% off. Save $10 a pair on all Ariat men's and ladies jeans. And all Ariat boots in stock are 20% off regular prices. Plus, ask about Ariat rebates. All Boggs footwear is 20% off. Pellet wood and gas stove inserts and fireplaces are 20% off. Buy $100 worth of Carhartt and get $20 in Carhartt bucks. Save now on a great selection of toys, tools, pets, safes, grills, and so much more at the Coastal Holiday Countdown Sale. See stores for Ariat rebate and Carhartt bucks back.
Coastal Farm and Ranch, just what your holidays need.
Now open and swim in Bell Creek Plaza.
Seven Cedars Casino has so many great acts and shows to enjoy and amazing local talent to choose from. You'll hear it all, and during the month of December, enjoy an extra dose of local bands you can't miss hearing, like Black Diamond Junction playing in Club 7 on December 14th, voted the Peninsula's favorite band for the past 3 years. Also, you can hear the Turner Brothers Band in Club 7 on Saturday the 15th, the area's only all-request band playing classic and modern rock. Seven Cedars is the place to be this month to hear all your favorites. For more information, visit SevenCedarsResort.com.
This is general announcement for the Corner House Restaurant in downtown Port Angeles. The people have spoken. Again, the Corner House is not only open for dinner Thursday and Friday nights, they are now open Wednesdays for dinner too. Believe it or not, the Corner House will serve until 8 p.m. on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays, folks. Still, our same great menu with buy a burger, get one half off on Thursdays, and prime rib Fridays. What better news is there? None! For the Corner House Restaurant, I'm General Announcement. Dan Hunt!
There's a reason that Brown's Outdoor has been outfitting the peninsula since 1919. Top quality clothing and outdoor living supplies at hometown value. Give the gift of exploration with Brown's Outdoor. Spoil the loved ones in your life with new camping equipment, from tents to stoves, sleeping bags to backpacks. And right now, if you present your ice skating receipt, you'll get 20% off stocking hats and gloves. Not sure what to get? Gift certificates are always a hit. Get yours at Brown's Outdoor in Port Angeles, 112 West Front Street in front of the skating rink.
Honey, you've been on the couch all day watching the game and checking your fantasy standings. You need to stretch your legs.
Good point. Ah, that's better.
I meant maybe get up, grab a drink, move.
Got a drink in my cup holder. I'm good.
What about your phone? Isn't it almost dead?
I'm charging it with a USB plug. That's in the couch.
Bargain Warehouse really sold you a good couch, huh, hon?
Babe. The couch sold itself.
Bargain Warehouse in Port Angeles on Kemp Street.
Chad Avery's my guest. He is the Juvenile Corrections Manager for Clallam Juvenile Services here, and we talk a little bit about the detention side of things. Really, that's kind of a foot in the door, fortunately or unfortunately, for a lot of the youth, into getting them some help down the road as well. And I went to the break talking a little bit about that. Maybe you can take us through kind of what would be a typical, I know there's no typical case, but, you know, a kid that you would likely see that shows up and how they work through the detention side of things and then into maybe some of the program things that ultimately I know you hope gets them some help.
Yeah, sure. So we'll get a kid referred in or brought in by law enforcement for whatever purpose, and they go through an orientation process where they're screened medically and mentally. We find out what's going on with them. We do an orientation process where we book them. It's the, you know, book them, Dano kind of thing. And then from there, we make referrals. So we have plenty of services up front that aren't the locked up side of things in the admin building, where we have True Star counselors, we have drug and alcohol counselors, we have family reconciliation, and all kinds of services. We're constantly changing and adapting to meet these needs, and we refer them out, and they get probation counselors sometimes for that supervision if it's on the offender side, or they get there's tons of services.
Right. How long is a youth typically in detention?
That's case by case. Mm-hmm. So we're a detention center, so it's short term typically. Mm-hmm. A few days, maybe hours even, up to 30. But it could go beyond 30 depending on the case. So it's all case by case. But we don't normally house them for long term.
Right, right. And just physically, how many beds do you have? What's the size right now?
We have 22 beds. We can have up to 32 for doubling up, but we're nowhere near that capacity right now.
Typically, you know, what capacity do you usually run out there as far as?
Mid-teens to low 20s.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, though, it's pretty short term, so there's a lot of, I'm assuming a lot of turnover. There's ins and outs going on.
Right, and the group dynamic can change in a heartbeat. So you'll have a good group, and then a kid leaves or gets added to it, and then it switches. So to be a JCO, you got to be on top of that. You got to be able to read the group. You got to be able to read individuals and adapt to that.
Okay, so let's kind of to bring this full circle, we talk about that, but really, one of the things I know you want to talk more about is people thinking about this as perhaps a career move, that it can be pretty rewarding, but it also sounds like you got to have a certain personality or at least a certain certain flair for being flexible, as you just mentioned, you know, kind of rolling with the punches, so to speak.
A wherewithal. You have to have some kind of finesse, and you got to be able to be improvisational. You got to be able to read people. You got to be able to meet people where they're at. You got to leave your biases behind and just be approachable and not authoritative to where you're tripping on the authority. So to work with these youth and to have that kind of relationship building takes a determination and I think a certain type of individual.
Why is it that it's tough to get people to do this kind of work?
I think a lot of people think that they can't work with youth. A lot of the times I'll talk to people and they go, wow, you work with youth? I don't know how you do that. And I think, I don't know how I can't. To me, it's like I'm a fish and I'm swimming in my environment. They think they're going to drown in it. So I don't know. I think people don't think they can connect with the youth the way they do. Mm-hmm. I think it's the most rewarding thing because it keeps me young. It keeps me connected. And I had a kid yesterday. He had a child. He had an 8-week-old child, and I had no idea that he was a new father. And he introduced me to her, and I was, of course, saying how beautiful she was because she was adorable. And he said to her, he's all, honey, this guy's like my dad. Wow. Well, he's like a father to me. Wow. And I was taken aback. I didn't expect that because I was pretty
You had to lay the law down with him a few times,
when I had
right?
to, yeah. you know, but right. I was always fair, and, you yeah. know, we worked with them for quite a while.
You know, in the approach with you know, treatment when you have kids in there, it's a bit different than the adult system as well. I mean, you can't do certain things because these are youth. And also, you don't want to do certain things, as you mentioned, because it's just going to cause more harm than good psychologically, perhaps, in your approach with how you treat, how you interact, how you, you know, be physical in some ways if you had to.
I mean, you have to be able to justify everything you do. So we have policies and procedures that guide us through that. That's my plumb line back there. And with that, there's always gray area, but very little of it. But if you can dictate your reasoning through that, you're going to be fine because those policies and procedures are there to be safe and secure. Safe and secure. We're not there to punish.
Do you find at times that sometimes these youth come in here and they may be really, and I'll use wild as the word, but in the outside, but they come in and they actually might have a bit different nature when they're inside with folks like you, just because you're a different person? I mean, granted, you got the lockup facility and a few other things, but really it's just kind of a change of environment and people around them.
Sometimes all it takes is that. Other times, you'll have a rapport with them and they'll obey for you. So poor law enforcement, they were out there and they had to
deal with the bad stuff.
And so the kid's going wild, but then, you know, all that wildness stops as soon as they get to our door and they'll toe the line. It's like Flip the Frog in that cartoon. Right. He won't sing and dance in the bar, you know? And so, but that's a compliment. That means you're doing something right.
Right. If somebody was interested in doing this as a career or any sort of maybe a change in career too might be it, how do you get started? What's the prerequisite? How does one start in this?
Well, you got to be 21 years old of age, and it's good to have an AA, but you don't have to have an AA, and you can call me. So if you've graduated high school or have a GED and you're over 21 and you think you might want to get...
You're halfway there.
Yeah, you're halfway there. Just call me and we'll talk and we'll take it from there.
All right. And I'm sure, you know, you're going to ask some questions to get a feel for how somebody feel, you know, is how their rapport may or may not be with youth or how uncomfortable they are or maybe how willing they are to kind of not be uncomfortable anymore, mm-hmm. too. I think that's a big part of
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. And it's being able to present that. And it's like we're not there to wear the uniform. We're there to be there for the child.
Staff-wise right now, how many? I mean, you obviously have probably room for more, but what's your staffing like right now?
Right now, I'm leading about 16 and then some extra staff. And we do have room for more.
Okay.
So
it's an interesting and probably one of those careers a lot of folks don't think about. As you pointed out, you always had an interest in working with youth. That's what got you here. But a lot of people don't think of a detention route as being a way to be a youth service person.
There's no better place, in my opinion. I mean, that is the best environment to learn about what's going on with kids. And if you want to have a great impact and a daily impact and be there when they need you the most, detention's the place, in my opinion.
All right.
I think that's where it's at.
All right, Chad, thanks for coming in. Good Thank to talk you. With you about what you're doing out there and stuff. Not bad for an old radio guy. Chad Avery there, who is the Juvenile Corrections Manager out at Clallam Juvenile and Family Services. And you can give him a call, 565-2628 is his number if you're interested, or maybe you might ask a question or two of somebody else you may know that might be interested as to what that might
Just give detail. Me a call and we can chat.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chad. Good
Appreciate
to see you.
It. Thank
All
you.
Right. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more on our program in just a moment.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio 1450 KONP.
Autumn Stites, rehab manager at Squim Health and Rehabilitation.
I think that we provide the best therapy on the peninsula and that my staff work really hard to figure out the needs of the patient. And I think that that gives them and us a sense of pride in what we do and why we do it.
Squim Health and Rehabilitation, whether for residents or outpatient therapy, they do their best to help you regain your independence quickly.
Most people that are here, they don't want to be here. They want to go home. And we know that. And so trying to figure out what's the most important thing to them to get them to be motivated to be able to go back home. And I think my staff do a really good job figuring out what is important to our patients to be able to get them to participate and be able to go home. I love seeing patients being able to go home and people being able to do the things that they love. Those are the things that we work really hard on to be able to help them facilitate being independent again.
Squim Health and Rehabilitation, a cornerstone facility. Call 360-582-2400 or go to cssnf.com.
Make the most of your winter season and get ahead with classes at Peninsula College. With three locations on the peninsula and online options, you can take the classes you need right at home. Get your high school diploma, train for a new job, or start here to transfer to a university. Small class sizes and personal attention get you to where you want to go. Classes start January 2nd. Apply now. go.penncall.edu. That's go.penncall.edu.
If you want to stay on top of your health, one simple thing to do
is take the pledge to go and get screened for the cancers that might affect you.
So stand up, cancer, and take the pledge at
GetScreenNow.org. It only takes a minute to take care of yourself,
and nothing rhymes with org.
Talk to your doctor about your health and screenings that are right for you.
I'm super happy about our new house.
Absolutely. Like the quality of the wood used for the framing?
Having a home that's more stable with straighter and stronger walls is worth a little extra.
Not only that, but I'm about buying from a local employee-owned store.
Angelus Millwork and Hartnagel have always steered us right. That's why we make sure our contractors continue to buy from them.
Well, I'm more than capable of doing many of our home improvement projects.
I think I'm going to keep you on the research and development team rather than labor.
Angelus Millwork and Lumber Company and Hartnagel Building Supply, building the communities to the Olympic Peninsula since 1906.
In small town Spring, Texas,
I'm here to honor George Herbert Walker Bush. He has been a very, very great president.
Preston was among the people watching the train carrying the casket holding the body of the 41st president. The journey will end in College Station, Texas, where Mr. Bush will soon be buried at his presidential library.
We are going to see something we've never seen before. 21 Navy fighter jets conducting a flyover in the missing man formation. The Navy was inspired by that traditional 21-gun salute we often hear at funerals. This, by the way, will be the largest ever missing man formation.
ABC's Amy Robach. Earlier, Mr. Bush was eulogized in Houston by former Secretary of State James Baker, who also was his best friend, and by his grandson, George Prescott Bush. I'm Scott Goldberg, ABC News.
Here's your AccuWeather forecast. This afternoon, mostly sunny, high 38. Partly cloudy tonight, low 25. Mostly sunny tomorrow, Friday's high 42. Cloudy skies tomorrow night, low 33. Saturday, a little rain in the morning, otherwise cloudy at first, then partly sunny, high 47. Saturday night, heavy showers later on, and Sunday, periods of rain with a high of 48. When you're away from your radio, keep up to date with the AccuWeather app. For AccuWeather, I'm Sally Sherman.
All right, we're back with more. We're going to talk with a couple of young ladies who just got off the street, literally. I've been watching what they had planned on Facebook. And Sheena Younger and Amy Miller decided to take it upon themselves to do what I guess you would call a shelter sleepover. Is that an accurate description of what you guys were calling it? Basically what they did, and they're just in from doing this last night. So they spent basically a day and a night being homeless and kind of learning a bit more about what's going on. Both of them are very much involved in outreach to those who are homeless through their work in the real world. So, you know, a little of this is probably not overly, you know, but I just from our conversation before we went on, I think you both would agree that you learned a lot more than you thought you would when you went out and did this. So first, I'll start with Amy. Why'd you do this? I mean, what was the, a lot of people will say, you know, you already work with folks. What made you guys decide you ought to just go out and see what it's like?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons why, but I think maybe most importantly is I hear from the people that I work with quite a bit that there is additional challenges that they face every day, and I wanted to draw some attention to those things. And I couldn't do that just because they're telling me this is something that happens. I needed to kind of see it for myself. And I think so that was a part of the reason why I wanted to do that. I really would love to help the conversation change in this community about who these folks are, what was the situation to get them there. I think there's a lot of conversation about all these folks, you know, are criminals or drug users. And that is just so far from the truth. I mean, we'll tell some stories, I'm sure, about some of the folks we talked with. But, you know, I think in every community and every neighborhood, there's bad neighbors. And I think that's also true in this community. And I wanted to draw some attention and some put some light on the fact that there are folks out there that are sick and tired of being judged by the behaviors of just a few.
Right. Yeah, and unfortunately, the bad apples tend to always rise to the top when we start talking about that. Sheena, a bit eye opening this night out. I jokingly said when you thought about doing this, I don't know if you thought about doing it on one of the coldest nights of the year, but maybe that was a good thing that worked out that way.
Me. Yeah, it was definitely eye opening for so many reasons. If we want to talk about the cold, I want to mention that I forgot how fatigued you get from being cold. And one thing that we heard is that, you know, from a man that's sober, doesn't have any issues, has a job, he's frustrated because when he finally gets a chance to get warm after being in the cold for over 3 hours and you're chilled to the bone, as you start to warm up, you get very tired, and a lot of folks will slump over or fall asleep. And for them, that's even frustrating if they've gone to see a relative or something, and for the first time they get warm and they fall asleep and they wanted to have conversations. But there's a lot of judgment there that if somebody's sleeping, they must be high or drunk or, you know, using something. And for these folks, that's just not the case. It's just it's the first time they've had a chance to be warm. And as they warm up and thaw out, if you will, it causes extreme fatigue. And I know because I'm feeling that right now.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's also true because it's not easy to get sleep at the shelter.
Yes.
You have to really put some work into getting some rest, and the rest that you might get there is not always a quality rest. Mm-hmm. So I know Sheena and I are kind of running on empty and dodging some of the walls that are trying to hit us, but we're on about 2 hours of sleep now, mm-hmm. and it's only one night for us.
And that's common, night after night for a lot of these folks, because, right. I mean, literally they're sleeping with one eye open. right?
Well, and I think, yes, I think that's part of it. I think there is some concern about whether their belongings are going to be safe in that kind of environment. But also, you know, I felt very safe there.
I did too.
And I think there's just, you know, when you have 16 to 18 people in one room, there are noises that you're not used to.
And it's just
the, and you're wondering where they're coming from. Yeah. And then even though the staff are wonderful there and they're trying to be as quiet as they can, they do rounds and they do check on folks and they check outside the property and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of unusual. And, you know, there's some smells and things that would affect you. And so it's, I don't think it's always just kind of wondering, you know, is there somebody out there that wants to hurt me or take my belongings? But there's other variables there.
Right. Gina, one of the things following you, because you guys actually documented some of this on Facebook, you did some live things where you could, and you also leading up to this had talked about, okay, this is, we're going out to do it. And one of the things that struck me, and I think it's true for a lot of us, you said, you know, these folks are one paycheck away. And you said this. You said, I'm one of those. I'm one paycheck away from perhaps being in need of using the shelter.
Yeah.
Did you find that? Was that verified for you in doing this?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. I mean, one of the guys that we met, just such a nice man, and he works. He works at Walmart. And he would love to have more hours and be able to make more money. But he said even at 40 hours, it wouldn't be enough to get him into housing currently. And so, you know, and then we met another gal last night that unfortunately was in jail for about 40 days. And it wasn't for criminal activity, except, well, I take that back. Obviously, it was criminal activity, but it was a DUI. It wasn't theft of property or something like that. Anyway, with her being in jail for 40 days, she lost her housing and her vehicle. And last night was her first night in the shelter. But she wants to work. She talked very openly about wanting to work, wanting to find a job. She was going to go straight to WorkSource this morning. I hope she did. You know, but in order to save up for housing, it, you know, it's quite expensive, as you know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, a lot of what you guys are experiencing is the housing problem we have here in general. What'd you learn, Amy, mostly? if you had to say the one biggie thing that you took away, and again, I mean, you work in social work with this problem day in and day out.
Yeah. I wanted to have a really good answer for this, but I'm really tired, so I didn't think it through beforehand. But I think what really struck me, and keep in mind that not a lot of stuff is going to strike me because these are people that work with me every day. But I think what really struck me is the welcoming feeling that they gave both of us, and the eagerness that they had to share their story with us, to be part of this project. They, you know, a few people would be like, what are you doing here? And we would explain what was going on. And I mean, we had groups of folks around us waiting to tell their side and waiting to share their story. And I thought, you know, that warmed my heart, because part of the reason that I really wanted to do this was to be their voice, because there's a lot of fear of sharing the story, because there's a lot of stigma and there is a lot of aggression out there that they're trying to keep safe from. And so I wanted to be the voice as much as I could. And so they were letting me do that, and they were eager about it. There's no arm twisting at all. Folks really wanted to share their story.
So how many were in the shelter last night?
47, including us.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, it's a full...
And that's in the shelter. And then there were folks that chose to stay in their cars that were in the parking lot. So there was
population. 47 plus, obviously, if you wanted to figure that out, that are need services. One of the things we talked about at the beginning is the bad apples, so to speak, that tend to get kind of the attention to things. And, you know, it is what it is. Because of that, though, some of these folks, I mean, these are the people that you were kind of around. I don't think we ever really see. Is that safe to say?
I do. I think it's safe to say. But I do think that there was a group that we talked with that were at the Bell, which has kind of, it's in the conversation right now. And that's really what struck me, was how passionate they were about preserving that Bell for original intention, and how angry they are at the couple bad apples that are, you know, just like you have your neighbor that doesn't mow their lawn, you know, has stuff in their yard, You know, that that one neighbor in a neighborhood doesn't mean that everyone in that neighborhood is like that, right? And so it's the same in this community, in this situation. These folks are really passionate about, she was talking about sweeping around the bell and making sure all the trash is picked up. They're very passionate about that area, even though, you know, that they're there. But when people drive by, they're yelling at them, judging them. But so they're lumping everyone together, and they're just as frustrated as the voices that we're hearing in the media right now.
Mm-hmm. You said something that just made me want to share something real quick, too, is when you say that the community doesn't see the people we're talking about. And I think part of that is their own fault. You'll see in some of the videos, if people go back and watch that, that has struck me. As we were walking around, we had our backpacks. We had a garbage bag with a sleeping bag. I was carrying my blanket. And so walking on the street, you know, when it's dark and early in the morning, there was no community interaction. And I was still being me, which I usually say, hey, how are you? Good morning. Right. And it was a completely different reaction I would get from community members, at least, you know, the few that were up and around at that time. But even people driving by in cars.
People that we know would normally... if we waved in our normal clothes,
they would have waved right back, honked, pulled over, said, hey, how you doing?
Yeah, but they didn't. It was like we were invisible. It was seriously striking.
Yeah, so another personal challenge to folks, if they're not ready to spend the night at the shelter, would be to go ahead and see these people as people, say hi, wave, acknowledge them. That's a really simple thing that can be done that makes a difference. It really does, because, you know, we started walking with our head down and not engaging as much because we were not being engaged with.
And you were only literally a couple of hours into it, basically, at that point. This hasn't been a lifestyle.
So I can't imagine,
for a while.
Weeks and months and years for some of that kind of interaction is...
Isolation.
It's got to be isolating.
How many of them were willing to have a conversation with you when they kind of, I mean, obviously they probably eventually figured out what you were doing. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, were being honest about what they needed?
I think 100%.
100%. Okay. Yeah. Everybody that we asked, you know, we're just here. We want you to have a voice. And, you know, you don't have to share anything if you don't want to. Every single one did.
Yeah. We didn't fact check some of their stories. Right. But at that point, I don't think they had any reason to lie to us. Just not that you've asked this question yet, but it's probably on there. A lot of, I would say close to 90% of the responses when we asked about what do you need from your community, restrooms.
Really?
Places to use the restroom, especially after hours. But all throughout the day, that was something that's in need. There are some businesses that are open for that kind of use, but they also deny access at times to certain folks if they're trespassed or things like that.
Right.
So that was something that was across the board an issue.
Yeah.
How many of them felt like they were just, you know, that close to getting themselves back on their feet, would you say? I mean, if you had to, you know, maybe there was just an obstacle here and an obstacle there, but not a lot of things that were insurmountable, but they just couldn't quite get over those yet. And that's where they're at now.
That's a great question. I don't know if I could put a number to that, but I could answer in this way and just say that I would say the majority of the folks that we spoke with had a plan to get back on their feet. Okay. There was, I mean, we spoke to, let's say 40 people. And I would say maybe two of those individuals were kind of okay with how things were going for them, and they didn't have a plan, and they weren't really interested in making a plan. But everybody else had a plan and had a vision for what they wanted, and were taking sometimes very little steps, but taking steps towards those goals. Would you agree, Sheena?
Yeah.
All right. Now, you kind of alluded to this, but the shelter challenge is kind of part of this as well. And I know you've asked some folks out there, hey, maybe you ought to try to do even partially what you folks did and at least spend some time there or an overnight, if you can, just to get an experience. And that's part of this project, right?
It is. So we obviously had a lot of challenges, a lot of challenges. And I think really were able to take off the lenses that we were wearing and put on reality lenses. You know, we hear what's going on, we hear rumors, we see things on social media, but to be able to say now firsthand, I've actually said, I really hope nobody says to me that we're making it too easy to be homeless in this community, which we've heard, right? Because listen, it is not easy. It is not. And I now can say that, right? I can say that it's not easy because I've experienced it. And so, yes, we have challenged Councilman Mike French and City Manager Nathan West to stay in the shelter, and they've accepted, mm-hmm. and they'll be staying in the shelter next week. And we are anticipating them challenging perhaps neighboring community of Squim and our county officials. So stay tuned.
Yeah, this is really the big overarching goal here is to create more allies in the room. So in order to change the dialogue, you need to have at least one ally in the room, and we're creating our little army of allies so that the dialogue can change in every room that we're in.
Do you think too, and I'm going to just flip this around, you start to get some support for some of these folks that are the good folks, that, you know, that the majority, as you mentioned, will make it easier to take care of some of the problems that we're having with the bad folks, you know, the ones that are causing the things that are making the headlines right now?
No.
You don't think
no,
so?
Probably not.
Yeah.
I think this is about helping those who want help.
Okay.
I think maybe some of those folks that are engaged in the misbehavior aren't ready for that yet.
Right.
And so
okay.
this is more about putting our energy and our resources into the folks that want it and are looking for it and know what to do with it. And I think there's really some tangible changes that could help. And we're hoping that it stems from a lot of community collaboration and agencies working together.
All right. Well, it took you guys a lot of guts to do that, even just for one night. Hats off, and what an experience as well. So we'll continue to follow it, and we'll get you both maybe back on again down the road in some of the outreach work that both of you, I know, do through Vimo and some other things too. Mm-hmm. So, Amy, good to see you again.
Good to see you too.
And,
thanks for having us.
Maybe you can get a little sleep tonight.
Yeah.
I know. Amy Miller there.
Really
and Sheena Younger, always great to have you. Thanks for coming in again. Good to see you as well. All right, we'll take a break and wrap things up right after this.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio 1450 KONP.
The cold temperatures remind us that there are those who may be struggling. Hi, this is Clallam PUD. Did you know we have a program where you can help those less fortunate pay their electric bills? It's called our Neighborly Assistance Program. You can make a one-time or recurring contribution to a fund that assists qualified low-income residential customers. Find out more or print the enrollment card by visiting clallampud.net and entering Neighborly Assistance into the search bar, or visit your local PUD office. Your community thanks you for your generosity.
Your friends at Peninsula Bottling would like to extend a warm thank you to their customers for their continued loyalty over the years. Serving the Olympic Peninsula since 1955, Peninsula Bottling is your local Pepsi distributor and also one of the sponsors of KONP's Breakfast with Santa. Please remember to shop local this holiday season and support your hometown businesses so that our community can grow and prosper in the coming new year. Peninsula Bottling wishes everyone a very warm and happy holiday season.
For great gifts this Christmas, don't overlook Jim's Pharmacy, because Jim's Gift Shop is filled with a variety of gift ideas. You'll find greeting cards, ornaments, Seahawks gear, wonderful treats anyone would appreciate. Jim's will have a wonderful selection of gift ideas throughout the season, and many special events offering extra fun and savings. Remember the Gift Shop at Jim's Pharmacy this Christmas. Celebrating 35 years, Jim's Pharmacy, behind the Port Angeles Post Office.
The Family Christmas Album offers another Christmas memory, presented by Viking So and Vac.
This Christmas, Viking Sew and Vac has a beautiful new sewing machine or powerful vacuum in any price range. And you also enjoy Viking's unsurpassed service after the sale. Drop by this holiday season on East 1st Street for sale, service, and repair. Viking Sew and Vac in Port Angeles, wishing everyone a Merry Christmas.
Christmas at Grandma's house. I can remember going to Grandma's house. We would travel about a half hour to get there, and many years the road was bad, the dirt road wouldn't be plowed, and Dad would park at the top of the hill, take us kids down in a sled. That was fun. All bundled up and Christmas coming. We drew names for our gifts. Everybody's name was in the pot. My favorite gift that I can remember of all times again at Grandma's house was a gift from my Aunt Betty and Uncle Lloyd. Now, I know in today's standards, this isn't much of a gift. But she'd take two metal pie pans, painted them white, glued red rickrack around the edge of it, and painted a picture on the inside. That hung on my bedroom wall, those two plates, for many, many years. My only regret is I still wished I had them. I'm sure Aunt Betty and Uncle Lloyd never knew how I cherished that gift.
Mike has FOM, the fear of missing McRib, so he cleared his calendar.
Yo, dude, backstage passes? Nah. Hey, babe, this weekend? Can't do it. What up? That sounds great, but count me out.
Do what you gotta do. Just don't miss the return of the sandwich, the myth, the legend, the McRib. Come into McDonald's today and get a delicious, saucy McRib sandwich, made even better with the one-of-a-kind taste of Dr. Pepper, the one you crave. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
The holiday countdown sale is underway at Coastal. Find the perfect gift for everyone on your list.
Coastal Farm and Ranch, just what your holidays need.
All Ariat men's and ladies' tops are 20% off. Save $10 a pair on all Ariat men's and ladies' jeans. And all Ariat boots in stock are 20% off regular prices. Plus, ask about Ariat rebates. All Boggs footwear is 20% off. Pellet wood and gas stove inserts and fireplaces are 20% off. Buy $100 worth of Carhartt and get $20 in Carhartt bucks. Save now on a great selection of toys, tools, pets, safes, grills, and so much more at the Coastal Holiday Countdown Sale. See stores for Ariat rebate and Carhartt bucks back.
Coastal Farm and Ranch, just what your holidays need.
Now open and swim in Bell Creek Plaza.
Need a one-stop shop for winter quarter registration at Peninsula College? Join us on campus for Slide Into Winter Registration Day. Walk in anytime December 10th from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. to register for classes, win prizes, get PC swag, and eat free food. Visit pencol.edu/slideintowinter to learn more and to let us know you're coming. That's pencol.edu/slideintowinter.
Hello, I'm Mark Hemstreet, owner of Shiloh Inns. Shiloh is proud to be celebrating over 40 years of providing you, our valued Shiloh customers, with Shiloh's sincere friendliness, efficient customer service, and clean, comfortable, attractive, non-smoking rooms and suites, all at an affordable price. Shiloh also offers many free amenities like free Wi-Fi and free continental breakfast or hot, full, delicious breakfast at most Shiloh Inns, as well as pools, spas, steam, sauna rooms, exercise fitness facilities, and business centers. And even the kids stay free. And for you dog lovers, Shiloh is very dog friendly. So ask your best friend where he or she wants to stay. Next time you're traveling for business or pleasure, we think you'll get a paws up for Shiloh Inns. For reservations, call 1-800-222-2244.